Hello and welcome to episode number 61 of Investing from the Beach. I'm your host, I'm Chris Hansen. I got my co-host with me today, Mr. Chris Lamb.
Hello, it's Chris Lamb here.
If it's first time to the show, my suggestion is take a listen to this episode, maybe choose one other random one, kind of in the upper numbers, and see if the content resonates with you. If it does, then go back and start at episode number one and listen through those. Admittedly, when I've gone back to listen to the earlier episodes, it's kind of, Chris, have you gone back to listen to them recently? They're kind of embarrassing with regard to, we're a little stiff.
Yeah, maybe it's so embarrassing I haven't gone back to listen to anyone.
That's probably it. So I will apologize now for the new listener. The first ones might be a little stiff as Chris and I are, as they say, finding our voice. But more importantly, the content is good. What we talk about on this episode is how to think in order, or what it takes to reach time freedom. Chris and I both did it. I worked at IBM. I started there, I don't even know how many years before you did. Now I think about it, probably 15, 16 years before you did. I was in sales. I reached freedom when I was about 40. Chris is almost 20 years younger than I am. He joined as an intern, was trying to find his place in the parking lot with his name on it as I was trying to find my way out the door. We overlap by a couple of years. We realized that we both had a strong interest in the stock market and developed an awesome friendship and relationship that continues to grow over the years. When I left, Chris was, he'd been there about 2-3 years, I think. I walked away when I was 40 or so. Chris was able to, he's much smarter than I am. He walked away when he was about 30. And we did it via the stock market. We reached time freedom, and that's not financial freedom. There's a huge difference between the two. Financial freedom, in our mind, is something that you use to replace an income, still takes a lot of your time. Time freedom is efforts you do that take little time, very, very little time. And then you have freedom during the day to do whatever it is that you want to do. If you want to go work another job, if you want to go into politics, go teach, do something productive. It's not about going to be a bum on the beach and taking pictures of your toes in the sand and posting it on Instagram. It's not that at all. The idea is that you have time freedom to go do things, to go pursue your purpose, do things that you love to do that can have an impact on your family and on your general community or society as a whole. And that's the way to go about this. And so I would say for the first-time listener, take a listen to this, see if our message resonates with you, if you like the way we think, if you like our stupid humor, and then at some point go back and start back on episode number one. And you'll learn in those first few episodes, again, it's a little rough, I apologize for that, but you learn
after you listen to those earlier ones, you learn not to have any more shame.
Yeah, exactly. You don't worry about it, yeah. Right? Because the content is good. Content is really, really good. We've had lots of listeners tell us like, wow, this is life-changing stuff. So really, really appreciate that feedback. And that's what keeps us coming back and doing these things more and more and more. Again, if you're a first-time listener, our recording schedule, we used to put it out, I think, once a week. We realized that was too much work. So we went into, I think, twice a month and realized that was too much work. So now we're down on a once-a-month schedule. We try and get it out on the first Monday of the month. With time freedom and other stuff we want to do, sometimes we might miss that by a day or so. But if you subscribe wherever you listen to, wherever you consume your podcast, then they'll get downloaded to your listening device and you won't have to go find out when we've put the latest one up. If you've got questions or comments for us, you can leave us a voicemail. Number is easy to remember. It's 747-24-BEACH. Easy way to remember that. Anywhere you are in the world, jump on a 747 airplane. And within 24 hours, you can be just about any beach in the world. That translates to 747-242-3224. If you'd rather send us an email, you can reach us at investingfromthebeach@gmail.com. You can also go to the website. There's a contact form there. You can reach us there. And you can see which one of the two Chris's is smart, and which means the other one is good looking. We got our picture up there, taken on Chris's wedding day in Hawaii. Where his, if you look closely at his eyes, he looks pained because he didn't get a lot of sleep and the sun was bright.
I didn't get sleep for about six to eight weeks or something. Well, actually, more than that.
Yeah, it took a while. There's some info up there you may find helpful. There's a book list there. We'll give you some things to think about. Had a lot of great feedback on that. There's some other areas you can click around in there too. Maybe find some other stuff that's of interest for you. along those lines, tonight's topic or today's topic, got an awesome email from someone, and I'm going to edit it out a little bit just because she named somebody in there, and I'll keep that person's name. We'll give them a different name here or a nickname here. But I'm just going to read this. There's some great feedback and great comments in that I think would help others. It was sent a couple weeks ago, and it says, "Good morning, Chris." And Lamb, just so you know, she's addressing it to me because I think she knows that you don't read the emails. But she didn't say the good-looking Chris, so I'm not sure which one of us she really thinks she's reaching. It says, "My name is Tanya. I know she's from San Diego. I've been listening to your podcast since about the time only 7 of them were broadcast. I want to say thank you for all the info both you and Chris have provided, especially these last couple of podcasts that have helped me clear and organize my financial plans. Full disclosure, I am dating, and she names him. I'm not going to name him. He knows who he is. I'm just going to call him Boyfriend. So I'm dating Boyfriend from your classes, and I've learned and heard more about you than what I listen to in your podcast. Even my children know who you are. During one of our recent road trips, the kids and I listened to your Work Ethic podcast, which I had previously listened to and thought would benefit my nine-year-old daughter My 9-year-old daughter laughed at Lamb's story about not doing all of his math homework because he didn't understand that he had to do the problems that were in between with the dash. So if his homework said, 3-8, when Chris was first in school, if you haven't heard that story, he did problems 3 and 8.
And see, that gives kids a lot of confidence. They know a dummy like me can do it. They can do it. They're ahead of me.
If you're the dummy, that makes me the good-looking one. Oh, no, that makes you the good-looking one. His story about migrating to the U.S. allowed us to have a conversation about how there are people from all over the world that don't have the luxury and the opportunities we have here. That's really cool. I mean, when we were putting that together, I didn't really think about that from a teach point with kids. So, Tanya, that's awesome that you're able to have that kind of discussion with your kids. Gratitude is something that Boyfriend and I are constantly trying to, quote unquote, teach my kids. I want to thank the two of you for providing yet another opportunity for me to have that conversation with them. My 7-year-old son thought Lamb's story about defending himself against older kids was, quote unquote, cool. Of course, I told him not to get any ideas of making weapons, but both of them have been training jiu-jitsu with Boyfriend for over a year now. And I think the story had them thinking about that, what they would do if they or their friends were ever confronted by bullies. So it's cool stuff. And Chris, when we were doing this, I didn't think about that application. So it's neat to see that people are taking it to a different degree than I would have thought of.
They didn't mention about taking their pants off like you did, huh?
You know, we were doing good. That makes me the dumb one, which means that I'm the good looking one. Hey, that works out. There was plenty of info in that podcast that my kids could appreciate, i.e. schoolwork, practicing of instruments, etc. And again, thank you for that. As a side note, with my 7-year-old, he says that when he grows up, he wants to do what Boyfriend does on the computer because he doesn't want to have to go to work like I do. Funny story, he was going through my phone and he said, "Mom, all the signals look good." I didn't know what he was talking about, so I asked what he meant, and he said, quote, "the signals for what Boyfriend does." And then I figured out what he was trying to say, but I still asked him how he knew that, quote unquote, the signals look good. And he said, "because they're all green except for one red one." It turns out he had navigated to a stock app on the phone and recognized that it had been an up day. So yes, he is aware that one day he will learn all of this and hopefully not have to worry about his finances in the future. I hope that by that time, both Boyfriend and I are where we want to be, so that my kids can live an even better life than us, which is cool. As for me, this last podcast helped me make up my mind about paying down my debt. I have a nice savings bucket and what I thought would be a nice investing bucket, as well as an IRA from a previous job. It's a decent bucket that I can grow. I'm obviously not planning to use that money for a long time. I guess she's telling us, Chris, that she's young. But it's okay since I currently do have a full-time job. Boyfriend and I have argued, or I guess a better way to say is we have had opposing views on paying down debt with savings money versus keeping money available. He keeps saying the cash is a position, and although I agree with him about having money available to use for investing, it doesn't make sense for me to keep that money available when, one, I could use it to pay off debt, and two, I'm still not investing. I can grow my savings bucket a lot faster once I have paid down my debt, which I mostly have at 0% interest, thanks to Boyfriend's advice, getting the 0% interest credit cards and transferring over there. Huh. I think that I'm thinking straight. If you have any thoughts, I'd love to hear it. I know you're not a financial advisor, but this has been something that's been bugging me for a long time. And if you hadn't covered it, I would have emailed you asking you to cover the topic of paying down debt versus saving versus investing. Chris, let me read a little more and then we'll talk about this because this is a huge sure. thing. I've cut down living expenses and I keep a spreadsheet that I monitor on a weekly basis. Some people say it's a bit extreme, but after going through a divorce and going from a high two-income household to about one-third of the income coming in, monitoring my expenses has been key for me, especially after purchasing my own home. Just a side note, living in San Diego and purchasing your own home on a single income is incredible. That's very cool to have heard that. That says that you're doing a great job in savings. There's only one expense that I'm not willing to compromise at this time, and that's having my kids in private school. It may not make a lot of sense for me to do that on a single income, but it's one decision I made 5 years ago, and so far I've managed. Sometimes I think if I didn't have my kids in private school, I would have more money available, but that may not be entirely true. So maybe keeping my kids there is making me more conscious of every dollar that I spend. And by the way, my debt is from stupid decisions I made right after a divorce when I thought I could keep the same lifestyle. The debt is not increasing. Chris, let's talk about that because that's a huge topic that I hear people talking about regularly. I see lots of blogs about it. I hear people talk about it in podcasts and the like. It's should you keep, if you have cash available, should you keep it off to the side, saving it as a just in case for an emergency fund, or should you use it to pay off debt? Or to take any other kind of expense things.
Yeah, we touched on it in prior episodes. You got to pay it off.
And the reason for that is if you find anyone that has no debt, and you're listening to two guys right here that don't, being in debt at all freaks us out to the point I oftentimes will pay my credit card off early. So if I put a big expense on there, I'll just go home and write a check for it. And do an auto pay. And so I may run thousands of dollars on a credit card every month, but when I get the bill at the end of the month, it's zero. It bugs me to even have debt that really isn't debt. I just, you know, it's due in 30 days. I just don't have to deal with it. I'd rather just see a zero balance. That may be a little bit obsessive, but I'll tell you, not owing a dime to anybody, if you've never been in that situation, you don't understand.
Yeah, I send my utility company about $1,000 or something, so I don't have to deal with the bills.
You do that. I know you do.
Yeah.
Right. Hear what he said. I've done this too. So let's say that your bill for electricity runs $100 a month. What we'll do is in January, we'll kind of estimate that's about $100 a month, and we'll just send $1,200 in at once. And then you don't have to ever worry about the bill coming in, and it just chips away. And you know as you get to the latter part of the summer, you just kind of check the balance and see what it is outstanding so you're not surprised in December because you haven't paid the bill. But it takes 2 seconds to glance at the bill and you file it or trash pile it, whatever you do with the electric bill, and go on. It's an
awesome. You save a lot of time that way. Yep. It's also a mental kind of strain on you. It's not there because you don't have to think about it.
And you know you're going to use electricity anyway. Mm-hmm. So you're quote unquote prepaying it, but really just saving the headache of writing the check. The other thing about having cash available when you have debt, what you'll find is, and Chris and I have run into this, it's kind of an odd thing where I'm trying to think how I not so much broach it, but how I explain this. You'll know of someone that has debt and they'll complain about it or comment about it. And then they go on vacation. Or they'll go buy a new car, or they make some kind of big expense. And you kind of look at that and go, in your mind, what are you doing? You owe money, and you owe money for not being able to pay for prior expenses, and now you're putting more money on top of that when you haven't paid for what you did 2 yesterdays ago. And now you're adding more to the pile.
Yep.
And what it says really is two things. If you look in the mirror, it's a lack of discipline or a lack of prioritization on your part. But what you also want to think about longer term is as you get deeper into the investing world, and whether you do stock market, real estate, sell stuff on Amazon, start a small business, doesn't matter. You're going to have the opportunity to invest with people around you. And people around you are paying attention. And if you're unable to manage or control your impulses, when you have an outstanding debt and you're instead using money to go on a trip or to do whatever it may be, guess who's not going to invest with you when the time comes?
Yeah, or in you.
Yeah, exactly. Both. Not yeah. with you or invest in you because mm-hmm. you're showing that you're not worthy of it. And that may sound, I won't even call it subtle. That may be, it's not recognized by the person that's doing it. But I promise you, by the person that has the ability to invest with you or in you, they're paying attention. And that's not something you want in a business partner.
Yeah, we all have a credit score with one another, right? You said we all have a credit score with one another.
Not the FICO score that you see at Experian.
Yeah, not the FICO score, right? Not what the credit bureau looks at or when you go apply for a loan.
It's your reputation credit score.
Yeah, it's your reputation. And it's not just your reputation, but it's a big part of your reputation because it's money. And when people see how you handle money and how you are with that and how you treat debt and borrowing money from others, it's a big factor in how people see you and how they want to work with you. Yeah.
And it's not.
So a lot of people aren't aware of that.
Yeah. And it's not so much if you owe that person money. It's more so if they know that you owe money and yet you're doing other stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you come up to them later on and say, hey, we've got this great, do you want to invest in my real estate? Or do you want to, whatever it may be, a wise person will avoid you.
Yeah. There's a few times where I've seen people that they owe money and then, they borrow money from somebody, mm-hmm. from a friend or something. And then I always try to figure out what did they borrow the money for? And I find out they're borrowing money to pay off somebody else.
Yes.
So you're just transferring the debt.
It's a personal Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, it's a Ponzi scheme. And I just like, whoa. And then guess what? You're going to steer clear of that person. Yeah.
Yeah. So there is something to be said for, so you got, in thinking this, should you keep a little cash on the side for an emergency fund? I understand the thinking. I would say the logic is pay off the darn debt, because if an emergency does crop up, worst comes worse, you go back on a credit card. And, if you need to, you do what you got to do.
Yeah, but when you go in debt, the emergency comes.
Yep.
And so not ahead of time.
No. And so what you do, though, is so you use that cash, pay off the debt quickly. And what ends up happening mentally is if you look at it and you say, oh, my gosh, I have no cash, and you freak out, guess what you're going to do? You're going to walk around and pick up bottles and cans and do side gigs or side hustle or something, work some overtime to get some extra income to build up the cash balance. Because now you feel comfortable again. You start thinking, well, what if I have an emergency? I have no cash to do it. Well, now you build up that cash fund and now use that and again pay off the debt. And so you put yourself in anxiety mode until that debt's paid off, which is awesome because you should be anxious that you have debt. It should eat you alive until you pay it off, because it works the other way. Is once you have no debt, I joked with people saying, look, once you pay off that last dime of debt, I always joke with people, I hope you're standing on the scale, because when you write that last check, the needle will move because that weight of debt is off your shoulders. And people laugh and they don't believe
it. It's not even like a scale that measures how much you weigh, but it's a confidence scale.
Yep. It's huge. I've had lots of people that are in real estate and owning multiple properties and being in debt. And they'll say, well, wait, Kiyosaki says there's good debt versus bad debt. And I say, yeah, he sure does. I can quote the pages that he says it. I can also point to lots of people that have been in real estate and now have switched over to seeing the benefits of being in the stock market. And now what they do is they don't go into debt. They buy houses for cash. And they don't have a mortgage. And that blows away a real estate person. Like, what? That makes no sense. And yet it makes perfect sense when you think that way. Just a totally different way of thinking. I can't imagine going into debt for something. Doesn't even cross my mind. So, Tanya, I hope that helps a little bit with regard to the thought on whether you should have money in savings and keeping it available for, quote unquote, emergencies. Versus paying down the debt. It's cool. And I love to see you be anxious and filled with anxiety because you have no cash and debt. Because that will make you, back to fire. That'll help you reduce the expenses and do what you got to do. and or work overtime, or, you know, pick up bottles and cans, sell stuff out of the garage, whatever it might be, to build up some extra income. And when that bank balance grows a little bit, pull it away from yourself, pull the rug rat from under you, and, you know, pay off the next credit card, or make, you know, take the next, pay off a chunk against that piece of debt. And you keep doing that. You get out of debt, you'll love what I told you to do.
You know, when people are in debt, I don't think they realize kind of the mental strain that they put themselves in. You know, I can give you an analogy. It's like you have your thoughts and the way you think, and when you tap into your brain, there's this area in your brain. You know, I don't know anything about the brain, but I'll just kind of give you, okay, and I'll let you say your disclaimer later, Chris.
Go ahead.
But it's, you know, when you have these thoughts or things come up, you know, decision making, you're tapping into an area of your brain that we call it how to think. And there's a pipe that goes to it. And this pipe gets clogged up when you have debt. And you're not going to be able to access that, you know, that area of your brain that allows you to think properly. And so with the debt, it's basically clogging up this pipe. And you know, you're going to have low confidence. You're not going to have that confidence to go about doing anything. For those that say, let me take these dollars that I am, you know, paying either 0% or a low interest rate on, and let me go invest it. It's very hard to invest properly and do it the right way and be successful at it when you have debt that is clogging up that pipe.
Because you're in fear mode. What if I lose this money and I have debt? You're freaked out.
Yep.
Whereas if you have no debt, it doesn't feel good to lose money in an investment.
Yeah.
But it's much less stressful when that money does not need to be utilized to pay off debt. If you haven't been in that situation, what we're saying may not sink in. If you're in that situation, you're nodding going, they are absolutely right. And you can't read about this in a book. It's describing chocolate ice cream to somebody that's only ever tasted vanilla. Mm-hmm. Once you taste it, you're like, oh, that's why they like it. I see it now, or I can feel it. The disclaimer that Chris is talking about, I don't think we're going to cover it today, but if we do, neither one of us is employed, neither one of us is licensed. We're not financial advisors. We cannot give financial advice. And the stuff we talk about on the show is strictly our opinion. There's no basis in reality or sense on this because we are both unemployed. And you'd be a fool to listen to a couple of guys that have been unemployed, for one of us for almost 20 years and one of us for coming up on 10. Clearly, we must not know what we're talking about because we don't have a job. Strongly suggest any kind of financial stuff we talk about, you ought to go to talk to somebody who has a job, who's employed, who has a license. In order to have a license, you have to have a job. We have neither, because clearly they know what they're doing. That's why they're employed. And so strongly encourage you to go speak with a financial advisor about anything that we've talked about, because we haven't worked in a decade or two decades. So clearly we have no clue what the hell we're talking about. Thank you, SEC.
All right. Now, what financial advice you want to give next?
Exactly. Now, let's see. So did we cover that one? I think we did, right?
Mm-hmm.
Next thing about that Tanya had in her note, I could probably go on and on about the different topics you've covered in your podcast and how they've impacted my life, regarding friends, people being wind in your sail, work ethics, apps versus operating system, etc. If you're a first-time listener, the apps versus operating system, that's in one of our earlier episodes. And we talk about those other topics in the earliest episodes as well. The conversations that boyfriend and I have become more fulfilling after discussing some topics you cover. We don't always agree with each other, but it's nice to provide different perspectives, and I especially love when I can correct him by referencing you or Lamb's comments. Again, thank you for sharing your experiences through your podcast and for allowing families like mine to have something to look forward to. Tanya.
Tanya sounds a lot smarter than her boyfriend.
And right now, boyfriend has got a big old grin and he's turning a little red. And he's like, yeah, I think she is.
He might practice jiu-jitsu moves on me.
I was just going to say, he's a lot bigger than the two of us. He probably weighs as much as the two of us combined, and it's all muscle. But in all seriousness, it is really cool, and I've heard from others as well, the topics that we've covered on these podcasts often lead to really, it's a great entree into discussions to have with your significant other, husband, wife, partner, whatever it may be, about topics related to this. And it really kind of opens the door to that. So, Tanya, I'm glad you're able to use that. And boyfriend, just remember, and I think I told you this before, you got a good one. Consider yourself very lucky. Tanya, thanks for sending that in. Others, if you've got comments for us, we'd love to hear them. We appreciate all the feedback. Next thing,
yeah, thank you. Thank you for the note, Tanya. It's a great, was it an email?
Yes, it's an email.
Yeah, it's a great email.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. And one thing that she mentioned that I was going to make a comment on, she said, you know, I think she felt the need to, provide a better life for their kids. And I think most parents try to do that, right? They're always kind of, I think if you talk to most parents, they always worry about, hey, do I got to leave something behind for my kids, you know, as far as money and assets?
Hell no, you leave them education.
Yeah, but most parents tend to do that. Right? They try to, hey, let me build up and save up, and then they neglect that, you know, they're not transferring the knowledge and life experiences to them. That's more valuable than any money and properties and things you can leave to them, because the money and the wealth is actually crippling them.
You learn from the struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Because I always ask a parent when they say that, and I said, did your mom and dad leave you anything? Most of the time they said no.
Yep.
Like, why do you feel the need that you need to leave something for your kids? Well, just focus on, you know, passing on the knowledge, the education, right? The foundation that you set for them. Forget about, you know, the nest egg or whatever you're trying to build for them.
So, and if you've taught them how to be self-sufficient and have let them go through the struggle to build it up on their own, awesome. And then if you leave them something at your passing, cool. But that's not going to harm them.
Mm-hmm. It's when they don't need it.
Yeah. And it's when they don't know how to manage it and you leave them something. Now all you've done is you've created a problem. Mm-hmm. Right? Because that chunk of cash that you leave them, if they're not responsible enough to handle it, that's going to turn into a new car in the driveway, you know, some new electronics in the house. And within 5 to 10 years, it's going to be nothing.
Yeah. Or if they have an understanding that, hey, there's some money that's going to be left for them, there's not the drive is not there.
There's no motivation.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, there's no motivation.
That leads into our next thing we were going to talk about. There were recent articles. Apparently, Kobe Bryant turned 40 or 41 in the last couple of weeks. And they did a reprint on an article. And the clickbait, it was on CNBC. It says, Kobe turns 41. And shares financial advice he wished he would have told his younger self. You don't need to go look this up. The bottom line on this is he said, you know, he got a big paycheck when he was, I think, 19 years old, something like that, when he signed with the Lakers, $3.5 million, something like that. His first inclination or what he noticed was a lot of people around him came up and wanted things. He felt pressured to give them stuff, whether it was money or gifts or whatever it may be. His advice looking back is don't give money, don't give gifts to people. You're harming them.
Delusion?
No. I was just pausing waiting for you for you to take the ball.
I was like, what happened, man? The article just stopped there.
For those of you that are listening, I'm going to leave a little bit of it in there. There are times when I have to go edit this podcast. It makes it sound sometimes like Lam and I just are ready to keep talking. Sometimes we do have a 5 or 10 second pause and we're waiting for the other guy to be sure if he's done. And I just go in and I cut that out so it sounds like we're just sitting across the table knowing when the other guy is done talking. Just so you know, sometimes there's a long pause and they only hear one of us curse the other one of us saying, hey, God damn it, it's your time to talk.
Yeah, I thought we got disconnected somehow.
So the brilliance of editing.
Well, if you want me to say something, I mean, it's a snippet of
over.
it's a snippet of a recent a prior podcast that we talked about with Kobe, referencing Kobe and his money advice, I guess, when he turned 17, 18 and started with the Lakers, got a big paycheck, and they asked him, what did he do with it? He deposited, you know, pretty much all in the bank and didn't go buy anything new. You know, wasn't your typical NBA star that went out and, you know, bought a house, a car, and, you know, everybody their own car, you know.
It didn't have a big gold, big gold iron cross.
Yeah, exactly.
On his neck.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So his thing was, you know, he, and I was very impressed with that. He was able to kind of think that way at that young age. He didn't want to cripple people by, you know, giving them the money, making them weak, right? Because you're kind of taking their ability to earn and to, you know, their drive away when they just see these big dollars come to them so easily.
And his point is, one of the comments he made in there was to figure out how to help somebody. You don't help them by giving them money. You don't give them a fish. You teach them to fish. So you help invest in their future. You know, if that's helping them paying for education, okay, cool. Something like that I get.
But so even, similar to being a parent, right?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Give them the education. The bigger takeaway on that is the how to think, not so much from what it says in the article. Or did you have more to say on that before I go on to my next?
No. To give an example of some of the things that, you know, he had some family drama. I don't know if you heard his mom, I guess, asked him to buy her a house or something, and he bought her a house, and it wasn't expensive enough. And so she was pissed off, and she went and sold all his high school, you know, uniforms and things like that to get money.
Oh, wow. I hadn't heard all this.
Yeah, yeah. He was really pissed off, and he had to try to go get it back or something. But I don't think he was able to. You know, you can tell that's what, you know, he didn't try to give everybody what they wanted. And he said, hey, I got you a house. That's enough. You know, she wanted millions of dollars of, you know, in a home. I think he probably just gave her, maybe bought a house that's like $500,000 or something.
Interesting. Interesting. More on that before I move on?
No.
And so the other topic on that, or the other how to think aspect of that, that article was basically a cliff note version of a bigger article that had been published a year or two before. That article is clickbait. And all they're trying to get you to do is click on this to, oh, maybe Kobe's got a different perspective on something. If you've never read the article before, cool, I get it. You know, interesting to hear the perspective. If you've read other articles about that, understand it's clickbait to get you to click. The bigger piece on that, you'll see a lot of stories out there. You can find a ton of blogs. You can find a ton of podcasts. You can even find a ton of classes about how to get out of debt. And it's really simple. All you do is you figure out how to reduce your expenses and you pay down the debt. And if that means you do without on certain things, you do without on certain things. There's no secret to this. It's delayed gratification and pay off the debt. There's no, you know, 10 ways to get out of debt. You don't need to click on that. It's really simple. Now, if there's a trick about how to save $20 on your cable bill, I get it. But the objective is to get out of debt. And once you've got zero debt, now you use that cash and you pile it up and you start putting it to work. But there is no secret to this. And whether you do a debt snowball or an avalanche, I think are the two terms they use on that. You know, you list out your debts and you either pay them off one by one by one, or you pay them off in order of smallest to largest, or you pay them off in order of largest interest rates. However you want to do it, doesn't matter. Just pay the darn things off. And so don't get wrapped up in which other ways to, you know, if there's little secret hacks or anything like that. It's crap.
Don't yeah, it's more of a mindset change.
Exactly.
And then that translates into a new habit that you're forming. I mentioned before that, hey, I'm okay with eating bread and drinking water. You know, if you don't, you know, you got to do that, you got to do that.
Yep. If you got to live on rice and beans, cool. Mm-hmm. Do what you got to do. Hate it. So that will get you even more motivated to get out of debt. If you say, rather than eating steak, if you got to eat hamburger, do it. Mm-hmm. Get out of debt. And so you don't need to be clicking on a whole bunch of other articles. You're wasting your time. Use that time to figure out how to get earning more money. Along those lines also, is Chris and I have talked about this a couple of times, and somebody pointed it out to me. I don't know if they came up to you in this last week or so. We were teaching a class. The person came up and he said, you know, I've listened to friends talk about podcasts. And he said, it's really interesting. I listen to one podcast, and that's it. Related to finance stuff. And that's you guys. He said, I might go listen to an episode of another podcast, you know, like a Goggins interview or something like that. And I might listen to other podcasts. He's interested in true crime things. So he does that for kind of enjoyment. He gets a kick out of listening to some of the old stories. But he said, I don't ever need to listen to any other type of financial podcast. You guys have got it. That's a hell of a compliment. And then you and I have talked about this before. Chris, what other podcasts do you listen to?
Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah, and I don't either. I click on a couple every once in a while to see if they're saying something of interest.
I might listen to ours sometimes.
You haven't listened through 1 through 7. But I don't listen to other podcasts. I was flattered when someone said, you guys are all that I need. You know, I get out of debt. He said, you know, I'm learning how to trade and invest. He said, if I were in real estate, I might go listen to a real estate thing or learning how to sell stuff on Amazon, but I'm not doing that. I've got what I need right here. And my time commuting is not spent listening to podcasts. My time commuting is spent listening to learn how to trade and how to invest. I thought, wow, that's cool. That's a huge vote of confidence. So I appreciate that. And then the last piece I had to talk about today was an article that we both saw. We sent it to each other, I think, before we realized that the other one had sent it to us. Article, I think it was on CNBC as well. And it talked about 3 items to avoid if you want to be happy. And the first one said, avoid retiring early. And I saw that and it's like, huh. Chris, I don't know if I could be happier.
Mm-hmm.
I've been retired for darn near 20 years.
Yeah, and I think that's because they interviewed a lot of people. For them, retiring early is probably in your 50s, and most of them probably mid to late 50s, right? Because most people think the normal retirement age is 65 or 67 or whatever it is nowadays, right? So they're interviewing people probably in their 50s retiring, or, you know, just before 65.
And they don't have a quote-unquote purpose. They don't know what they're going to do next.
Yeah.
And they're not comfortable with their stream of income.
Yep. It's more of, I have this nest egg now. I just hope I can live off of this. Yeah. It's not about, you know, where's the income streams coming from. And as you're retired, your wealth continues to grow, not you're depleting off of it.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Key point to make on that. And this is, again, and I put that disclaimer up there. We're going to give not anything we're talking about. Remember, it's 2 idiots here that are talking. So Chris, here's my question for you. If you were to, just for grins, go withdraw all your money from savings account, checking account, and brokerage accounts and bring it in the house and just kind of roll around in it, and you can be like, you know, Scrooge McDuck, mm-hmm. roll around in your cash. Mm-hmm. And then the house burnt down, so you're left with nothing. Let's say you're left with about $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Would you need to go back to work?
No.
So you could turn your $5,000-$10,000, whatever that small amount is, you could turn into something you can make a living off of.
Yeah, yeah. Or if I need to go back to work, it wouldn't be for very long.
How long might you guess you might have to go to work?
Well, it depends on how long it takes me to get a job. But, you know, I got to go back and learn my ABCs.
That's true. I don't know what he's talking about. Listen to the prior episode.
I would say, let me be conservative and say no longer than a year.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. Yeah, yeah. Give me a few $1,000. If I had to go get a job within a year, I'd be out of it.
I mean, it's the how to think, right? You know, your mind is not gone.
Correct.
Right. So that's the most important thing that we have is our experience, our understanding, you know, our mindset is there. So mm-hmm. with that, you're not going to starve. You'll be able to build back and get to time freedom very quickly.
Yep. And if it meant that I had to scale down the lifestyle a little bit for a period of time, mm-hmm. I got no problem doing that.
Yeah.
Right. I don't care about ego and pride. The bigger thing I want to get to is back to freedom. And so if it means, you know, I move the family into a little one-bedroom apartment somewhere, cool. Then guess what? We're going to live in a one-bedroom apartment.
Yeah. They're going to have to go look for more cans.
Yeah, exactly. Seriously, if we got to look for cans and bottles, that's okay.
Yep, you got to do it.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that. And then the time would be spent trading and investing. And yeah, I think I'd be shocked if it took more than a year. And that would just be if the market decided to go completely flat for a year.
And so retiring early, it's not, you know, being unhappy to retire early has nothing to do with the fact that retiring early. It has to do with not knowing why you're retiring and what you're going to do. And what happened is
plus concerns about money.
Yeah, and actually, you'll find that people who retire, the younger they retire, the more happy they'll be. The reason being is I believe that you have less time being brainwashed, you know, being an employee. Because if you retire at 60 and somebody retired at 40, you spent 20 years longer creating this habit of a certain thinking that you have to unlearn when you reach 60. But somebody who's at 40, they didn't spend that much time or as long as the time, you know, thinking as an employee. So generally, those bad habits that or whatever habits that come out of thinking as an employee can be unlearned quicker. So easier to break those habits that are not as strong.
I think there's that. There's the not having a purpose, and the unhappiness could come from the stress of, oh my gosh, am I going to outlive my money? Mm-hmm. And once you know how to have your money grow, the concern of outliving my money never crosses my mind. It's not even on the radar.
Well, you hear a lot of people just don't know what to do. Let's say they're not concerned about the money, but they don't know what to do. And then they get bored and then they go back to working. Yeah. Right? Because like I said before is, you say, oh man, I missed that, that social scene at work. That's because that's all they knew. They spent that many years, just that's what they're used to. And then when they're without it, they feel like, oh, I'm missing something or something's different. And you don't fill it with anything else, though you tend to go back.
Also, think of the, I don't know if you and I have ever really talked about this. Think of the when you were working, the people that you spent the most time with, if outside of work, not in the 8 to 5 or 9 to 5, but if you made a list of the top 5 or 10 people with whom you spent the most time outside of work, a chunk of those probably were coworkers, right? Buddies that you worked with.
Oh, with people that I spent time with?
Outside of work, yeah. And a lot of them might have been coworkers.
For me, it wasn't. I
not so much?
Yeah, I didn't hang out with coworkers a lot. Because the thinking's different, so... And I didn't want them to know I'm only working 15 hours a week.
Well, yeah, you're outside of work. Most people 8 to 5. All right, so outside of 8 to 5 is outside of work. Yours is like 11 to 2.
Yeah. You're right.
But when I think back, before I had my eyes open to what can be done in the stock market, so in my early mid-20s, the people I was hanging with were coworkers.
Yeah.
Right. On weekends and all that. And once I started getting my head around, all right, I got to learn how to make my money work. I spent much less time hanging out with them. Yeah. And my time became more solo in teaching myself how to do this. And or was hanging out with people that I stumbled into that appeared to be on the same path.
Yeah.
And sometimes they stayed, you know, friends for a season, I think is the, or friends for a reason for a short period of time. And then as I start getting more and more into the trading and investing and the how to think aspect, the friends that I developed there, I spent more time with. But that's because I was going on a path away from work.
Yeah, because you met me when I was still pretty young. I was 20 years old. And,
correct.
You know, I was still going to school. And so a lot of my friends were still, you know, like college friends. And then those that I knew, you know, from a work perspective, it's not really at the work location, but... you know, others that were out and doing other things. And I had the mindset of, let me figure out how to go get this money thing working and learning the stock market. And there weren't many people doing that at work.
Yeah, so right? you had the benefit.
So it was tough to find people that I was like, oh, you know, like-minded, and let's do this thing.
Yeah, so you had that benefit right as you started to go to work, right? I didn't get that till I'd been working 7, 8, 9 years.
That's right, that's correct.
Yep. So that's the difference. So, hey, man, you're welcome.
Oh, thank you.
I just realized, hey, look at that. Yeah. That's because of me. Sorry about that. Yeah. So that's the retire early. They had three items on that list, three items to avoid if you want to be happy. So one was
buy a house.
Don't retire early. Two was buy a house. And when I saw that, I started to laugh. And the logic that they have behind that is the house is an expense. It's a burden. It's a hassle. It's a, you know.
Sucks your cash away.
Exactly. And your time.
Sucks your lifestyle away.
And your energy. You said something the other day about when you go to rent, it comes with a property manager.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Yeah, most people, when I say, they're like, huh, what was that? I say, when there's something that goes wrong with the house, right, who do you call? If you own the house, you call yourself, mm-hmm. right? Or you're the one that picked up the phone and figured out how to get it repaired or deal with that mess.
Yep.
I call the property manager, which is the landlord.
Yep.
Right? So as a renter, you have that, you have a property manager that's given to you at no charge. If they don't fix things on time, don't write them a check. Yeah, it'll get fixed really fast. And you never have to deal with that headache. You just, something's wrong, call the property manager.
I used to get grief from friends. I went from owning a place, did fine on it, moved down to a place on the beach, and I sold where I had, that I had owned, mm-hmm. and just was renting. And I thought at some point I might buy again. And then I really got into enjoying the rental stuff. Because I realized, prior to that, it had been a little bit of a fixer. It's just surface stuff, carpet and paint and whatever else, surface things that I could do, an unhandy guy could figure out. And when I moved into this little beach apartment, I loved the fact that if something was wrong, I could call up the landlord on a Friday or Saturday and go, hey, you know what? There's 2 inches of water on the floor. You got a problem, and I'm going down to the beach to play volleyball.
Yeah.
You got a key. Let me know let me know when it's done. And I'd walk out the door. Mm-hmm. And it was their issue. And I thought, man, that's awesome. Because when I owned the place, it had been me that had to either call the plumber or, figure it out on my own and go save a few bucks and do it on your own.
Yep.
But man, I love this. Somebody else's headache.
Yeah, when you don't want to live there anymore, it's very easy. Yep.
Go find another place, move.
Yeah, it's very easy.
Yep. A couple $100 for a mover and you got the new one. Done.
Yeah, so when people buy a house, a lot of stress goes into it because there's this pride of home ownership, and so they tend to pour all their life savings into it.
Gotta have the furniture. Gotta look nice for people to come over.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
mm-hmm.
The neighbors are gonna.
And then
judge
we go
me.
Back to what we talked about earlier in the podcast about being in debt. Right now you have to have this mental stress about paying the mortgage and paying for all the things you spent into the house.
Yep.
And then you thought that you're building this equity and all these things. It's money that's sitting there that you'll never touch. And when you die, cool, I'm going to leave it to my kids. They don't need it.
No. And you mentioned you got a friend. This lady had bought a house up in your neighborhood for, 30 grand, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. That's
worth,
right.
Worth a million something today. Same house.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think she bought it, almost 40, like maybe 40 years ago or something. And we had a discussion, and she said she bought it back then for about $30,000, and it's probably worth like $1.2 million now. And then I said, you feel great about that, don't you? And she said, yeah, yeah. I go, now think about that. I said, you have the same house. I go, did anything improve as far as your living standards? And no. I go, so you feel great about it being up, but how's your taxes? It's gone up too, right? Said, yeah. So all your costs has gone up, but you're living in the same home. Nothing has improved in your living standard. And if you want to sell the house, where are you going to move to? If you move to the same home, same area, cost the same. And actually, you'll be down in money because there's a cost of selling, cost of buying. So you're not in any better situation when the home prices go up that you're living in. It's the same. Unless it's a second home that, you bought for a lower price at a good time, kind of like a stock.
Yeah, it's an
bought
adjustment.
Bought it for a lower price and sold it for a higher price. Other than that, the home that you live in, not an investment, it will stress you out if you see it that way.
Yep, it's a place to live.
Yeah.
And the only way that she gets an improvement if she moves into a lower cost of living area, a different part of the country.
Yes.
So now she's got $1 million in cash. All right, she can go buy big in name any other part of the country. She can go live a much either bigger lifestyle or in her she could live a similar lifestyle at much less cost.
Mm-hmm.
But now the argument is, nothing against mid-America or where it's hot or cold or snowy or whatever else. If you want to step into that, awesome. If that's what you want to do, there's a lot of benefits to living in SoCal. There's a lot of downside to living in SoCal. You just got to figure out what it is that you like, and there's a trade-off for each. The third item, and this was awesome, third item to avoid if you if you want to be happy, is, Chris, I'll let you read it. What does it say? What's the words?
Don't be a lawyer.
Don't be a lawyer.
and we'll get sued for this by a lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. And the rationale on this is, and it really makes sense if you stop and think about it. What a lawyer deals with every day is contentious stuff. They're always not arguing, for lack of a better word. They're defending either their client or they're pursuing somebody else. And it's always in either attack or defense mode.
It's a battle.
Yeah, it's always in battle mode. And that gets old. There are a few people out there that love it. God bless them, and I'm glad they're there. And those are the ones I want to hire. The others, you look at people and you talk to people that are lawyers, they look and go, it's
you
a
said
grind.
There's a few people who love it, right?
Yeah.
Well, you don't believe them. They're a lawyer. They're a lie anyway.
So just so you know, go chase Lamb when you come after for defamation lawsuit. That was him. No, but it just made me chuckle when I read that. And then I thought about people I know that are lawyers. Mm-hmm. You kind of look them in the eye.
You can't find many, if they're honest to you, they'll tell you it's not a fun profession.
Yeah.
Right. And so how can you be happy when you're in that type of environment where it's contentious, you're always against something. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's a regular thing. It's not like, oh, it's once in a while.
Yeah.
It's just almost every day you're dealing with these things
again and again and again.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why, I remember I used to cover some law firms, selling at IBM.
Yes.
And I would walk in and there's all these securities. And then the way they construct the building is, you know, there's steps and it's elevated.
Yep.
And so it's like, you can't ram a car into it, you know? So they say, yeah, it's all thought out and, you know, for security reasons, because there's a lot of people that go in and shoot up law firms and shoot up, you know, lawyers.
They're pissed off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. There was a video of, I don't remember if you, saw one of those. It's pretty popular. You probably could pull it up on YouTube. There was a lawyer that came out right after the courthouse, and then the defendant or something, or the client, actually, because he didn't get the client, you know, freed, and he shot him.
Yes.
Yep. And the guy was just kind of hiding behind a tree where he shot him at point blank.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they were playing a plane dart back and forth on each side of the tree, and the guy was shooting at him.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, there you go.
I remember. See. No, I remember because I had a couple of law firms I covered on the IBM days too. You know, huge major firms that if you're in the legal or anything there, you've heard of these companies.
Yeah.
Like the largest law firms in the world. And when you'd walk into their offices, you know, these are the big high rises, downtown LA, Century City. if it wasn't obvious right there, security, you knew it was around. Big Brother is watching.
Yeah, it's very highly secured. You would think there's like a government CIA building or something.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but you know, I have lawyer friends and people that in that industry, and I do know they're very stressed out, and it's just not a fun environment or an atmosphere to be in for a profession or you know to do it the rest of your life kind of deal.
And they're coming to you saying, "Teach me how to trade." Want to do
there's a few lawyers that
there's a couple that we're teaching now.
I've looked at it. Yep.
Yep. Any other words of wisdom? Or shall we wrap it up?
Nope. I think we're good.
You heard our how to reach us before email, voicemail, however you want to do it is fine. As always, we know that if you'll apply what we talk about in this episode as well as in prior episodes, you can get to the point of time freedom. And time freedom to us is signified or symbolized by the ability to go to the beach on a Tuesday when nobody else is around and listen to the waves on a Tuesday. They sound much, 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 much better than any wave you'll have to hear on a weekend, or you get to hear on a weekend when you have to share that sound and that slice of beach with other people that are working Monday through Friday. The objective is to get to Tuesday waves. It's an awesome spot to be. As always, we thank you for listening. We look forward to speaking to you next time. Take care.